Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, March 8th, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry, once again podcasting to you from my Toyota Echo, somewhere on I-75. I think we're near Knoxville at this point. Joining me, as ever, Kyle Maestri.
How's it going, guys?
And joining us today, two guys who need no introduction, except for the fact that they both really require introductions. We got our longtime friend, Travis Watson. Say hi, Travis.
Hi.
Got nothing else to say, Travis?
I don't see Lane Kiffin anywhere.
All right, that's true. And joining us, as promised, we got Alligator Sex columnist, Michael Perrone. We know him as New Kid. You will know him as New Kid. Say hi, New Kid.
How you guys doing?
All right, we got a lot to talk about. We are on the road back from Lexington, Kentucky, where we were all up there seeing the Florida-Kentucky basketball game. We're hopefully not going to get crashing into this pool up here. But we're going to talk about that, break it down, what it meant, you know, Florida's tournament chances, all that stuff. Florida lost 74-66. Sort of collapsed down the stretch. Kyle, you want to go ahead and give your quick thoughts from the game?
Yeah, I tweeted that if Florida and Kentucky played 100 games, 90 of them would play out the exact same way both of the games did this year. Both teams have a style that feeds right into each other.
Yeah.
Kentucky likes to jump out to a big lead, relax, let the team come back in, and then seal it with a win at the end. Florida likes to fall behind big, make one push coming out of halftime where they cut it to a very small margin, and then fail to score down the stretch. That's exactly how this one went. It's exactly how the game in Gainesville went. And it was really a good atmosphere in Rupp for the most part. A little underwhelming during the game. I feel like the fans could have been a little bit louder, but it holds so many people. It's such a big arena. It was really great just to be able to go there and watch a game in Rupp.
Yeah, the spectacle was impressive to me. Travis and New Kid, you guys were up in the arena in the stands. What did you guys think of the atmosphere and everything?
We were pretty much above the arena. We were the second to last row. Kentucky doesn't really like to give opposing fans ticket office good seats at all. A little bit of complaining about that. From my side, you know, I was just really impressed with the arena in general. You know, you kind of feel the history. It's kind of like going into Yankee Stadium. You know, just so many good players have come through that place. I was a little underwhelmed with the student section. They only fit 600, whereas, you know, the O-Dome has 1,000 in the student section right on the court. They jam their student section behind the basket. There weren't a lot of rituals going on like they do in the O-Dome. It just seemed like the students weren't really a part of the atmosphere, a part of the game.
It felt very much like an NBA crowd. No yelling on defense on Kentucky's part. They would clap at big possessions, but otherwise pretty lame effort on the part of their students, I'd say.
I don't know, I was still pretty impressed by the atmosphere and the environment. Kyle, we talked about that before the game started, especially during the starting lineups and everything. You want to talk about that?
I thought the students weren't the problem. I mean, the problem is that there's only 600 of them, like New Kid said. So, like, the rest of them you're filling with alumni, and there's a lot of seats in there. It's not like the O-Dome. So you're getting 24,000 alumni or, you know, other people who live there or students who care enough to procure tickets some other way. But I really felt like, because I went to Lexington also for the football game this year, and when I was watching all the pregame stuff where they're singing the national anthem and then they do the old Kentucky home or something, and then
I think that's a senior day tradition.
That's a senior day tradition.
That's
all right, so that was really okay. Cool. And then they did this thing where, like, after the player introductions, they drop streamers over the student section, and they introduce them as, like, the sixth man, the eruption zone.
And which sounds sexual, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. The name's not, could use some work. But still, it's cool that they do that. And my first thought was when the team came running out of the locker room, they had all the cheerleaders wave the flags, and it looked like a football game to me. Like, it was kind of like the Swamp to me. Like, not in the level of noise or, like, size, but just in, like, the pregame, like, feel of it a little bit. And it was the first time I was like, oh, I'm in a basketball town. I'm in a basketball school right now. Like, Florida's just not like that. It doesn't kind of, like, make you feel the same thing before the game. And I felt like the cheerleaders running out with the flags, all the flags of Kentucky waving in on the court and stuff. It was just, like, a little bit of a different feel to me.
That's also something you've seen Florida change around a lot in the last couple of years. The way they come out onto the floor before the game is, in the 4 or 5 years that we've been here, probably changed 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, the product that they're putting out in Gainesville has really changed a lot, too. They really try and
make more of a spectacle. I remember my freshman year, it was more just the band plays, the students do their thing, and that's the game. Now it's a lot more band, a lot more music, you know, a lot more pep.
It's funny you say it's more of a spectacle now, because I felt more in Kentucky like we were going to an event. Like, it was like this, like Kyle said, a football game in Florida.
Kyle's right. That's what it seemed like, you know, when they play jazz on the Jumbotron at the Swamp and the players come out.
Yeah, it's just... Because when you go to the O-Dome for the basketball game, it's just no one would mistake that for, like, something that people in Gainesville care about. Like, nobody's there. Nobody cares. Nobody's loud.
The alumni never stand in Gainesville.
It's just not the same thing. Like, yeah, this is something that you go to and you do just because Kentucky's playing. It doesn't matter who they're playing. It doesn't matter what's going on. Like, it's just a basketball town. They care about basketball. Yeah. And when the Gators were winning, it seemed like Gainesville might go that way a little bit, but obviously it was just a little bit of bandwagoning as far as the environment inside the O'Connell Center, which has clearly faded away in the last 3 years or so.
It's funny because I think Kentucky very much knows that, and it said, what was the thing it said before the game, like the home of the greatest tradition in college basketball.
Right.
Like, they know it and they broadcast that.
Right, yeah. Obviously Gainesville can make no claim of that, no such claim. So I don't know. You guys, what did you feel like from the second level? Was there as much like...
Well, the big thing I would say is despite the location, we still had a great view of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The arena was really wide open, and they did something really interesting. They do like what they do at Madison Square Garden or the Lakers arena. They shut the lights off
in the upper deck,
so you get like a really good, crisp, clear view of the court.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. There really wasn't a lot of distractions. Like your eyes get focused towards what's going on in the floor the entire time.
They did that at Ole Miss, except for the top lights were pretty much the only lights in the play, so the whole place just looked like you're playing in the dark.
And the media was up there,
right,
so you couldn't see anything, right?
Right. Right.
Probably helps that Rupp is completely full at all times.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting thing, they serve alcohol there, unlike the O-Dome.
That is interesting.
It was $6 a beer, so I decided not to partake at noon.
But off-campus arena might have something to do with
true.
It.
True, yeah. Just like an NBA game.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk, I guess, about the product on the floor. What actually happened at the game. Kyle, you want to lead us off with that as well?
Kentucky jumped out to a big lead right away, like I said. Let's start with the opening. The starting lineup was a little bit different because it was senior day. They put Bledsoe, Cousins, and I don't know if Miller normally starts.
Yeah, he does, but he didn't start today.
So they were all three of them were on the bench, and instead they went with all their seniors, which was Perry Stevenson, Ramon Harris, and Mark Krebs, who was a walk-on, earned a scholarship now for his final year. And then they still started John Wall and Patrick Patterson, who is only a junior, but in academic standings, he is a senior and he will be graduating after this year, mm-hmm. Partook in all the senior day honors and stuff like that. So they started that lineup, which played actually for like the first 5 minutes of the game. UF unable to capitalize on the fact that John Calipari was not using his best players. And they fell behind just a couple points early, and then once they put Cousins and Wall and Bledsoe rather in,
right.
They opened it up huge, 36-18. They were pretty much just 13-0 run. They were pretty much destroying Florida's zone. Florida's forced to play a zone against them because they can't match up man to man athletically. They did a really good job feeding the post from one wing and then kicking it out to the other post to reverse the ball. And just getting a bunch of clean looks at threes, knocking them down early in the game.
The Florida guards are just basically playing chase the ball. Kentucky was moving it faster than they could rotate with the ball. And,
mm-hmm.
and their shooters, that caliber of player, when they're open, that open, they just don't miss.
And not only that, their big men are so big, so they just occupy Tyus and Macklin down low. And Kentucky just spreads the floor so well. John Wall slashes, kicks it out, and they just hit their open threes.
Right, and John Wall didn't even have that great of a first half, yet they still built that lead fairly easily thanks to some timely shooting from guys really wouldn't expect it from in Dodson and Miller.
And we really did a bad job on our offensive end, too. We couldn't score in transition. We just, you know, it didn't seem like we can get the ball inside the paint for a while. So that just led to that 14-0 run that they got.
One of the things I've criticized Kentucky about this year, and I really don't believe they won the national championship because they're so young, is that they're not much of a team. But the way that they move the ball in Florida in the first half, if they can do that in a tournament situation, they're going to be a very tough team to beat because the guards and the big men were rotating the ball into the post and then kicking out to the weak side at, like I said, so fast that Florida just had no answer for that in the zone. And Kentucky poses such, like Kyle said, such matchup problems up front that they're a hard team to play man-to-man.
Yeah, and Florida's offense was, like, miserable even by their standards at the beginning of the game. Like, absolutely nothing was going down. They were turning it over. They looked terrible. They weren't getting good possessions. It would be like milk the clock for 25 seconds or so, which is good. They wanted to shorten the game, but then they'd have to settle for a long contested jump shot. So really nothing got going. But they made a little push at the end of the first half, thanks in part to Ray Shipman, who came off the bench and gave them some really, really good minutes at the end of the first half. I think he had seven at halftime?
Yeah, 7 minutes in the first half.
Okay. How many points did he have in the first half? Five?
I believe five.
It was either five or seven in the first half, but either way, gave them a little bit of a lift. They cut it to 10 going into the half, and then they really made their push coming out of halftime.
Yeah, and they just came out. You know, they cut it to 8 real quick. They just had good scoring. Their defense, I think they changed up to man, and it looked a lot better. It seemed like they were causing some problems for Kentucky. That really allowed them to do a lot more things on the defensive end.
Yeah, we talked about it. It was funny because it seemed like Florida, which was clearly outmatched athletically and everything, came out with more energy in the second half. It made Kentucky look a little bit tired, which personally surprised me because Kentucky's way more athletic, has more depth. But again, Florida got a little bit of...
Another thing that was kind of interesting during that run was they were able to, on the defensive side of the ball, keep the Kentucky big men out of the post. They were forcing them up more towards the free throw line, and with the shooters played man-to-man on the perimeter, it seemed like Kentucky was having a hard time finding what kind of shot they wanted to take in that situation.
Yeah, and I think they really started crashing the offensive rebounds in the second half also. They were getting to a bunch of loose balls, getting some 50-50 rebounds, keeping possessions alive, and really throughout the whole game, they did a much, much better job not letting John Wall and Eric Bledsoe just run up and down the court whenever they wanted to. Because in Gainesville, they just pushed every single missed shot, turnover. They were out and running, sometimes off of
makes. You saw that in the final score.
Yeah, and I feel like this game, they just did a much better job keeping them in a half-court set offense. They obviously, John Wall had a couple runouts. He had a couple coast-to-coast layups because he's going to get a few of them. But they just did a much better job overall of containing that, I felt.
Right, Florida put in a lineup at one point that was sort of where they started to make some ground back. What was that lineup? It was Kenny Boynton at point.
Eric Murphy. Ray Shipman, Macklin, and Parsons.
Right. And really, Irv didn't have it today at all.
3-for-15 shooting.
Jeez. Didn't shoot it well. He hit a couple big threes kind of in the second half, but he really just never got it going offensively, never got into a rhythm, had a couple turnovers, some bad passes. So Billy didn't look happy with him for most of the game. But Murphy struggled early on, and it looked like he might be on his way to a really rough night. He got blocked violently a couple times Kentucky's big men. Couldn't really move them in the post, but he really settled in, and he said after the game, you know, they're just much bigger and stronger, so you got to play them smart and take away their angles and really just outthink them, which I guess he kind of did for the rest of the game. And he ended up with 9 points and 6 rebounds. Should have been 11, but they gave a tip-in that he had to Vernon Macklin instead. But really settled into probably his best game of the season, certainly if you take into account the level of competition he was facing. So
yeah, he's tended to thrive against terrible teams before, so when he came out and sort of played tough against obviously Kentucky's very talented front court. What did you think of that quote, by the way, where he said, you know, they're big and strong? Did you think that was a little bit of a dig at them?
About them being big and strong?
Well, the fact that he could outsmart them.
No, I think he was just saying, like, I'm overmatched, so the only thing I can do is try to be smarter than them. Like, I can't be more athletic or bigger than them. That's just not going to happen. Right. So I'm going to have to play a smarter game than they would. And, you know, truth be told, he probably did. I feel like DeMarcus Cousins isn't exactly the smartest guy. He's huge, and he gets positioned because you can't move him, but Eric Murphy, I feel like he has to rely on a little bit of a different skill set than a Patrick Patterson or DeMarcus Cousins.
I would almost say he's a little bit of the Chandler Parsons freshman body type, where he doesn't really know how to play the physical game at this point of his career. But what was encouraging about his performance, even the first half when he was struggling with the physicality of the game, was that He was where he was supposed to be in the offense, and he was posting up. He was getting in position to give the guard some relief, which the same probably could have been said for Tyus and Macklin in that first half.
Yeah, so go ahead, dude. You got some.
Well, I was going to say that, of course, he had outsmart Cousins and Patterson. You know, he's the only one who probably took the SATs out of the bunch of them. You know, Calipari probably took the SATs for everyone else on the Kentucky end.
So. Hey, Patterson's getting a degree in 3 years, right, which is at least 2 years faster than me. So I'm in no position to be making fun of Patterson. Sorry,
maybe just Cousins.
Yeah, maybe just Cousins and maybe John Wall.
But the real star of that lineup that the Gators put out there was Ray Shipman, and it was a shame that Billy Donovan does not see the glory that is Ray Shipman.
Ray Shipman. Yep. Yeah. 2 games in a row, he's come out there. He's been a spark plug for them. And he plays great defense. And Billy Donovan refuses to give him minutes.
This is a streak that I would say we've been seeing out of Ray in the limited minutes that he has been getting, probably going back about 5 games or so. Mm.
You know how many combined second-half minutes he's seen in the last 2 games?
What's that,
Three.
Adam?
Three. Yeah. He's scored, what, 10, 12 first-half points over these last 2 games, and he's seen 3 second-half
minutes. Buzzer beater, 3 on Tuesday
half. Right, he provided a spark off the bench in the Vanderbilt game, and Billy's just not playing him in the second half. I talked about this on the last show. If you want your guards to have a little bit of some legs at the end of the game, stop playing him for the entire second half. Ray in there. I'm infuriated.
And Ray matches up against guys like Bledsoe and Wall, who are a lot quicker, who are so athletic. Shipman just injects that athleticism. He's clearly our best on-the-ball defender. No offense, Kenny Boynton. But he does that for your team. He takes some pressure off the defense.
Well, he's a guy, too, that you're not going to expect a big scoring load out of. And you just want to go out there in his 10 to 12 minutes, ideally, that he's playing right now to just bust it on the defensive end and try to give those guys a break, especially if they're in the zone where he can fly out at those shooters.
Right, and he really did that. I think he had 2 or 3 rebounds also in his 9 minutes. And, yeah, I mean, him and Eric Murphy played a combined 26 minutes, and our favorite player, Dan Werner, played 25 on his own. And not only that, but, you know, once again, this team, time after time after time, has had a lot of trouble scoring at the end of games. Mm-hmm. And Billy Donovan, despite the fact that he had 2 guys really playing well on the offensive end and playing efficiently in Murphy and Shipman, who I believe were 7 for 9 combined from the field, so not wasting any shots out there. Really
not turning the ball over.
Turning the ball over, giving you really efficient production.
Did they have a miss in the second half? Because I know Murphy got blocked twice in the first, so I don't think he had a miss in the second half.
I honestly could not tell you that. But
I don't remember.
They obviously didn't miss much at any point in the game. But despite all that, he still went with Werner in crunch time from about 6 minutes in, played him for the entirety. And Dan Werner's final stat line, he had 0 points, 0 shot attempts, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. And 17 minutes into the game, he had nothing. He had a 17 trillion, which if you read Mark Titus's blog, you know what that is. But if not, that's 17 minutes and absolutely nothing else. Not a shot, not a personal foul, not a steal, nothing.
He was trying to pull his best invisible man at that point.
Right, yeah, it was unbelievable. Think about that. Think about being on the court for 17 minutes and literally doing nothing.
He did do a lot of little things. He untangled the net during one timeout. So, you know, he really is, he's contributing on that end.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Dan, just a little bit, although I'm as much of a cynic as anybody else.
He did start off as a hunter lover.
He did play some good defense on Patrick Patterson in the second half. That was key in about a man Florida's comeback, I would say.
I don't know if it's key to the comeback.
No. The defense that Florida was playing right there, they held Kentucky's scoreless or pretty close to it for a good run when they cut the lead down to 2 points.
He played decent defense, but, I mean, so was Murphy or whoever else that was going to be in there.
I would say it was more the change from the zone to the man than anything Warner probably did individually.
Regardless of all that, we know the one thing for sure he's definitely not going to give you is any kind of offense whatsoever, and that's been the problem late in games. They can't score late in games. In the last 5 minutes, they can't score. They scored 6 points in the last 5 minutes and 30 seconds of this game. They went 3.5 minutes without scoring any points over that stretch, and it's really, really killing them. And I just think that to put Werner in and leave 2 guys on the bench who had been hot the entire game was just such a ridiculous move, and by far the worst thing that Billy's done this year as far as a foolish loyalty to Dan Werner.
Right. He's doing that time and again. He did that in the South Carolina game. Dan Werner missed that shot. Missed an 8-foot shot by 4 feet, air ball. He had him out there for the Georgia game. Dan Werner tried to pass the ball with half a second left. He had him out there in the Vandy game, and we didn't score a field goal in the last 9.5 minutes. And again, when we need points down the stretch, he has Dan Werner out there again. A guy who was afraid to shoot the ball.
Yeah. And Werner out there at the end of the game is at the expense of either Macklin or Tyus, whoever seems to be in the doghouse during that game. But the fact of the matter is that those are probably the 2 of the 3 best rebounders on the team who I would want in the game at that point.
And for the last 2 games in a row, it's been Tyus sort of in the doghouse, like you mentioned. He started off kind of rough, but he got a little bit of shot going. He seemed to find a rhythm later on. I probably would have kept him in there over Werner.
It seemed like Donovan took him out when he finally got hot. He hit a couple shots there, probably about the 9 to 7 minute mark left in the game, and then we came back from the under four, and I don't think he came in again after that.
Yeah, I call that the Billy Donovan, pulling out a guy right as it seems like he should be staying in there. He's pulling out with the Ray Shipman all the time.
Well,
just to show how bad they were in the last 5 minutes, I think Eric Murphy had a dunk at 5:23. After that, they went 2 of 10, 0 of 5 from 3, hit 2 of 5 free throws, and committed 4 turnovers in 5.5 minutes. That's horrible. Like, you can't end a game like that anytime, especially against the number 3 team in the country.
This is like 3 games in a row that they've done that, too,
yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah,
but they did have a chance to execute at the end. They were down 6 with about 2 minutes left. Irvin Walker had open 3, missed it, got an offensive rebound, had another open 3, missed it. So they had their chances, they just couldn't hit their shot. But when you're relying too much on the 3 to bring you back in the game,
yeah.
You know, they say time and again, you live by the 3, you die by the 3, and we died once again by the 3.
And Irvin Walker could have been another candidate to sit on the bench at the end of that game because he, obviously, like we said, he had a bad game today. And it's really weird because it's like Billy found a lineup that worked and then totally went away from that at the end of the game. You could have went with that same lineup, taken out Irv, taken out Werner, had Shipman and Murphy in, and maybe things turned out a little bit differently. I don't really know. But that was obviously the unit that was cutting into the lead, giving you the best minutes playing together, and he just went away from that at the end of the game, inexplicably.
Did you guys think that Irv looked tired at the end of the game? Like, you were a lot closer than we were, obviously.
I mean, he looked as tired as he always does to me, and he's going to lie about it. He's going to say, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm a young kid out there. I feel fine. But, like, it gets to him playing defense like that, especially when they went man. Like, it wears him out.
Especially with, I mean, Kentucky pushing
right.
The ball up the floor with those guys. I mean, that's a matchup he won't see
probably
ever again. Wall's a special type of player.
Yeah, running after John Wall and Eric Bledsoe all game. Like, that's going to wear him out. And I don't know. I mean, just bad shooting. He shot 3 of 15. Like, you can't really say it was an isolated incident at the end of the game either. It was just an off day.
All right. Think of the refs.
Yeah, the refs were really questionable on both sides. I definitely don't think Gators fans have any ground to complain, though. I feel like it was, at worst, equally bad for both teams, and there were definitely a handful of calls where UF got some really ticky-tack fouls on Kentucky and were shooting free throws and really opportunities where they probably shouldn't have been, so I don't know. The refs were questionable, but
Chandler Tripp call was really ridiculous. You guys were a lot closer than
he was tripped. Yeah, that was a bad call. It should have went against Kentucky. But like I said, there were just so many bad calls on both sides. I don't think it was biased.
That's not the new in college basketball this year either. I mean.
Right. So, all right, we covered a lot of like the in-game stuff. But Adam, why don't you tell them kind of where UF stands heading into the SEC tournament, as you'll be making the drive back to Nashville in just a few short days here.
That's right. I'll be about 100 miles from where we are right now, about 3 days from now, but I'll be alone. They're going to start the SEC tournament Thursday against Auburn. They got the 4th seed in the East. I think Auburn, I guess, is the 5th seed in the West. They beat Auburn earlier this year by 8 at home. If they win that, they'll play Mississippi State. They also beat earlier this year at home. Mississippi State's the number 1 seed in the West. They're going into the tournament on a 3-game losing streak. Obviously, they're going to say, you know, it's a new season, new whatever. But they need at least a win. They could use 2 wins to get themselves a lock into the NCAA tournament.
That's not what John Calipari
says. John Calipari says they're a tournament team. But he also did say that, you know, if they win 1 of the tournament they're in, it's a lock if they're 2. I like that he was willing to say what they need to do, and we can't get Billy Donovan to even mention the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
John Calipari's laying out a game plan.
Right. Yeah, and I pretty much agree with what you just said. If they lose, they're probably out.
Yeah.
If they win 1, it's dicey, but they're giving themselves a chance. Yeah. And if they win 2, they're pretty much punching their ticket at that point. So,
Anybody scared of Auburn?
I mean, they shouldn't be.
Yeah, Auburn's not good at all.
The only thing that kind of concerns me is Auburn's a team that takes on the norm average of 33s per game, I think. Something ridiculous like that. And the way Florida's been defending the perimeter the last 3 games, I mean, that's a little bit of a cause for concern.
That's true. Auburn gets hot. That could be a very interesting game. And Florida beat Auburn by, I think, 8 at home. This is a game that Florida should have had in the bag like long before that and kind of let up near the end and came back. And the way Florida's playing at the end of games lately, like, you have reason to believe the exact same thing could happen Thursday.
I mean, I'm not really that concerned with Auburn. You know, knock on wood. I don't want to jinx the Gators, but
we don't want to do that on this podcast.
Not on this one.
Nope.
I'm more concerned with Mississippi State. You know, we played them. It was in Gainesville.
Yeah.
We're Gator fans. We're not objective. If we're going to talk about sex, I'll stay objective. But anyway, that's my one duty. Either way, but we played Mississippi State in Gainesville. Varnado didn't really have that great of a game. I mean, he only had, I think, 2 blocks, really short of his season average of 6 or 7. So, you know, you never know on a neutral court what Mississippi State's capable of. And they've been really playing well as of late.
And Mississippi State will be on rest, too, which is,
you guys say that Florida plays good on short rest, but with
this we don't say that, though. The rest of the media does.
Somebody else does.
Yeah.
One guy.
This backcourt, the lack of depth that's going on there, I don't know how excited you can be about playing games 2 and 3 days in a row at this point in the season.
I mean, what's funny about, not to pull the referring to the media in the third person thing when I'm part of it, but what's funny about certain other writers on the beat is the same guys who make a big stink about how tired everyone is, like, oh, God, the guards are so tired, and they're just tired, and that's why they can't shoot, are the same ones going, oh, they play so well on short rest. That's so weird. It's like, all right, let's not look at any of the other factors, like, oh, who they're playing on short rest, which has obviously been lesser opponents, almost all West teams. They're 6-0 on the short rest weeks, I think.
Yeah.
5 of those games were against SEC West teams.
A couple were against even worse teams, like Presbyterian back in December.
Okay, my mistake.
Yeah.
So,
and one was against, Troy, I think, maybe. And then, like, Ole Miss, and Tennessee is the best win on short rest. Well, Tennessee might be the best win, but Tennessee was their best win on short rest.
Okay.
So
it's obvious that, you know, there's many other factors there. It's not this magic inexplicable, they play so good on short rest, even though we think they're so tired.
Yeah,
so.
They also shoot poorly on short rest.
Yeah, I mean, just as the observer in the stands, Walker and Boynton in particular, on these Saturday games after a Thursday game, have been, their threes have been flat and short.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just shoot, honestly, they just shoot poorly in general. I mean, they're not a particularly good team. Team shooting wise, I think I saw today that Boynton's been shooting 35% from the field this season.
He's up to 35.
Wow!
Yeah, fantastic.
That Georgia game,
we can get this
for
from the excellent Kentucky program.
And not only that, you know, it just wears on your legs. You're playing short rest like that, and you know they got to slash to the basket. They got to make cuts. They're playing consecutive nights. You know, I really don't. I don't think this team's gonna make a run in the tournament. In the SEC tournament.
Do you think they win one or two? Do you think they get anywhere?
I think they beat Auburn, definitely. Yeah. Auburn's just not that good of a team. You know, if we don't beat Auburn, that's just going to be, you know, a catastrophe.
And I see 2,500 people.
All right, let's get a little bit of a round robin here. Right, so, New, you say they win one game?
No, I don't say I they definitely win one game. I think they'll beat Mississippi State.
Give me a prediction. So you say they win two
games. I say they win two games. I'll lock that in.
Okay, Adam?
I'm going to also say they win two. I think I'm a little nervous on the Mississippi State prediction because there's no guarantee that Brandon Backlund's going to come out and score 21 points and that he's going to hold Barnato to 12 or whatever he did when Mississippi State came to Gainesville. But I'm going to go ahead and say that they win both of those. I don't know. Or they lose to Auburn. Honestly, that's the way I could see it going.
Yeah, I'm going to say they just beat Auburn because last year was kind of a similar scenario. They needed at least one win, maybe two, to really make a case for themselves. And they lost to, was it Auburn?
They lost to Auburn.
Yeah. So it's the exact same deal. And
they lost
to an Auburn team that they should not have lost to. That they had defeated.
That was a Friday night game, not a Thursday game, right?
That was their second game.
They needed
two
to win, and they only won one.
Okay. Yeah. So, and they had already defeated Auburn on the road. I actually went to that game.
Right.
So it was a game that they should not have lost, and they lost. So I think they're capable of doing that again, but I'm going to say they hold off Auburn. I do think they lose to Mississippi State, though, placing them as firmly on the bubble as humanly possible, and we'll hold our breaths until Selection Sunday. Travis?
Yeah, we just found out Kenny Boynton's shooting percentage for the season. It's
drumroll.
36.8% from the field.
That's before today's game.
Before today's game, and 27.4% from 3-point range.
Well, both of those numbers dropped after today.
Give our listeners your prediction, though, for the SEC tournament. What do you think they're going to do? How many games do they win?
I think the key is how the Auburn game goes. If
do they win one or two games?
I'm
in the tournament.
I'm expecting them to win the Auburn game.
Okay.
But if you have Boynton, Walker, probably Macklin as well playing more than 25 minutes in that game, you're going to see a lot of tired legs on Saturday, and I think Mississippi State especially can.
All right, let me make
penalize
this.
You more than anybody for that. So I'm going to say that probably happens. Florida allows an Auburn team that they should be pretty handily to stay in the game, and that'll be what dooms them against Mississippi State.
Okay.
So I say they're out on Friday night as well.
Okay, so you say they lose to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we have, if you're keeping score at home, Travis and I both think they'll win one and then be out. And New and Adam think they'll win two and be done, which means for sure they will lose to Auburn in the first round. What's happening? Go bet on that because we're never right about anything. Or they'll win the whole tournament. but probably no in between. Probably not that one.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that even if we beat Mississippi State for that second win that we're guaranteed for the tournament? Because I could see an argument where we don't get in still.
Not with the way the bubble is right now.
Mississippi State's actually one of the last four out right now, I think. Mm-hmm. So getting a win over a bubble team would make them all win a lot.
Yeah.
Because the SEC should get four bids no matter
right.
what.
As we said on the last podcast, the bubble, much like the Ukraine, is very weak. And I just think that if they get two wins, it's definitely going to put them in. Teams are choking all over the nation, not just Florida. It's really one of the weaker years that I can remember. But weird things happen, and obviously I haven't always agreed with teams that the NCAA selection committee have put in, as in Arizona last year. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but I do think Florida will get in if they win too. I think the SEC has been a good enough conference where they're definitely going to get four or five teams in. So.
And 2-1 in the tournament would put them 11-8 overall in the SEC this year, along with a couple good out-of-conference wins that you haven't seen in the last 2 years. That should probably be enough.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, one other thing I want to talk about.
All right, we'll just end it here.
Yep.
End the show, Barry.
Yeah.
Have any feedback? You can send it.
All right, this is something we talked about after the game, Kyle, something you and I picked up on interviews. It was sort of, you know, it was a game that Florida could have won and pretty much locked into the tournament. They come out after the game. They didn't seem all beat up on themselves. They weren't, you know, dolled up. They weren't very down. They seemed almost happy that they didn't just go out there and get their butts kicked. You picked up on that as well.
Yeah,
right?
I thought it was weird because I was expecting them to be very upset because obviously they're probably out if the season ended today right now. So, but yet, Eric Murphy and Chandler Parsons in particular didn't really seem upset at all. I totally got the vibe that they were just happy that they didn't get the crap beat out of them and that they felt like they made a statement by losing, which I never agree with, especially since, you know, John Calipari can say they played them the toughest of all the teams at home, but Kentucky has played a lot of close games this year, a lot. Like, it's remarkable they've only lost two games considering how many teams they've let hang around. So I don't think they made any kind of a statement by losing. But Chandler actually had a quote that I used in a story where he kind of begged to differ on that. So, I don't know. I don't feel like there's no such thing as a quality loss, in my opinion. And if I were them, I'd be a little nervous and maybe a little, gravity, a little grasp of the gravity of the situation would help them and motivate them. I don't know. So.
It's fitting we're talking about quality losses driving through Knoxville right now. Like, that was a very big Lane Kiffin point.
Moral victories.
Yeah, just keep it, run the ball late in the game, keep it close, so let's not get blown out.
Do you feel like it was enough, though, to come out and not just get blown out and, you know, show that then maybe they can play with some of the better teams still late in the season?
They always seem to play to the level of their opponent. You know, if you look at the Syracuse team, and no one would compare Florida and Syracuse at this point in the season, but if you look at that game, they did exactly what the formula for their games have been this season. They fall down early. Make a really big, strong push at the end. They actually got a 1-point lead, I think, in that Syracuse game, and then they just fell apart. They did that to Kentucky two times. You know, they did it to Vandy again.
They did it to Michigan State too.
Yeah,
so, and they were good. They got lucky and won. I don't know if they got lucky, but they won that game.
But their play is also diminished against a team like South Alabama, and you know, Richmond's a good team, so I'm not going to say that. But you know,
as fighters,
they really play to the level of their opponents, so you just can't tell. You know,
right, and also. The way the NCAA Tournament Committee Selection Committee does it, and I totally agree with this line of thinking, is they're just going to try to strip names and, you know, colors off of every team and make it solely about blank resumes if they can. Obviously, they follow it so closely that they're never going to be able to remove themselves from the situation in that way, but they're not... In their minds, there's no such thing as an eye test.
Yeah.
And in my mind, there's no such thing as an eye test. So I'm sorry if you're sitting out there and that's one of the criteria or if that's your biggest criteria.
Say it,
but it should be no criteria whatsoever because that's the dumbest way to evaluate a team. Like, you can't just sit there and say, oh, that looked good, that looked bad. Like, it's about the body of work that you've strung together. I don't care if, you know, you've played teams close. That's not what makes a good team. You got to be able to win games. And it's not... enough to put on an eye test in a loss. That's like the 101th criteria that I would pay attention to. So,
is eye test like the 2010 bracket word that we're never going to hear the end of?
I don't know. From people who know what they're talking about, that's for sure.
it's like the media topic du jour right now.
Well, it just sounds cool. It sounds like you know what you're talking about if you say they put on an eye test.
It sounds like you're in a secret club if you say they put on the eye test.
Or like you know, or you know what you're looking for. Like, oh, I know what I'm looking for, and that passed the eye test right there. It's
like,
I like
to go by the RPI test or the win percentage test.
I like the wins-losses test.
Yeah, that one. That was
quality
a good
wins test.
Yeah.
The eye test is like wins for a pitcher in baseball. It's like, it's like, oh, look how many wins they had, or look how good they played. But like, really, you don't know what his ERA was, what his run support was. Like, the circumstances seem to be left out a lot in that scenario. And it's just, you should never get rewarded for losing. It's just that I can't get behind that. I'm sorry.
So. I talked to Doug Gottlieb about this a little bit back when I did the interview with him before the Xavier game, I guess it was. That was a name drop. If we had a little pin drop sound effect, that's what you'd be hearing right now. And he said exactly what Kyle's saying. Like, they look at resumes. Like, they don't care about the eye test. They don't care if you're fun to watch. So, like, that's, like, who cares? Like, you know what's fun to watch? Good teams. Teams that win. Those are fun to watch.
The best 65 teams in the country.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fun to watch.
And the other thing that they don't take into account, and I kind of have a problem with this, is head-to-head. So, like, a lot of times we'll say stuff like, oh, Florida beats Mississippi State, then they're, you know, directly competing with them. And what we're saying is still true, though, in that respect, in that they're giving a team another loss on their resume,
right.
But it's not a scenario where they're going to look at Florida and say, they beat Mississippi State twice. There's no way that we can put them in. Obviously, the Arizona State situation last year, but it's the same, or 2 years ago, or whatever it was. But it's
last year.
Last year. So it's the same type thing. It's just, now it couldn't have been last year because...
Last year was James Harden. They made the tournament, right?
I thought it was last year because you were very angry about it on a podcast.
Sweet 16, remember?
Oh, Arizona's Houdini'd their way in 2 years in a row then. I was definitely very angry that Arizona made it last year. But I think 2 years ago was when Arizona State beat them twice and they didn't make
it.
Because, Arizona State played Temple in the first round last year. I can't even give you a matchup. So,
where? Last year, Arizona did go to the Sweet 16 and everybody said, oh, see, they were good enough to be in the tournament.
You don't have to get
but
into
did
this.
They deserve to be there.
They had the easiest
draw. They had
regardless.
The easiest draw, but that's not... Right. That's
regardless, the point I'm trying to make is head-to-head does not come into play, which I don't know how I feel about, honestly. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I mean,
go ahead, Travis.
We're seeing a lot of Florida compared to other bubble teams, and I think what you do out of conference is probably more important than that.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida lost to two A-10 teams, for example, and we're seeing it looked a couple weeks ago like the A-10 teams would be on the bubble with Florida, which in my mind wouldn't bode well because they had beaten them by proxy.
Right. So I agree with that line of thinking. It's like, what better way to compare two teams against each other than settling it on the court? I don't know. That's just where I come from. But they don't look at head-to-head. They say that openly. So
at the same time, I think your point's fair. That like Florida and Mississippi State, like Florida's not outplaying Mississippi State for the position. They're hurting Mississippi State's resume while improving their own.
Exactly.
That's really what's more important.
It's not the be-all, end-all.
Right. Which it shouldn't be. But, yeah, anyway, I think we're all more or less on the same page in this.
Wow, that's a first. How do we think about, like, conferences getting a set number of bids?
What do you mean?
Like, right now we agree that the SEC is going to get four bids, most likely.
I think they could still get
five. Florida and Mississippi State, possibly Ole Miss, like, all three competing with each other?
I say the SEC...
Or are they competing with the rest of the field? Like, going back to what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, there's no such thing as set bids either, so...
Right.
Yeah, they're competing with the field in general, which all three of them happen to be a part of. But I do think the SEC will get five bids.
Five?
Yeah.
Five?
Just
wow.
I think they get five, just because I think they've been a good enough conference this year to get... I mean, I don't want to tick off any more listeners, but I'm not okay with the Big 12 getting seven and the SEC getting four. Like, is that going to happen? Do you guys feel like that's deserving and that is going to happen?
Well, are the teams in the Big 12 all over 500?
In conference?
Yeah, because
so are all the
SEC,
teams in SEC,
we're talking about 3-9-7 teams, aren't we?
Yeah, and they're, which is over 500.
Right, but it's not the magic 10 win number that seems to be the requirement for the SEC the last couple of years.
I coveted 10 win number.
I'm not fine with the Big 12 getting seven teams. They're really not that strong.
Right.
One, you know, top to bottom to do that. The Big East, they can put... Just put everyone in the Big East.
The Big East is a lot bigger conference, too.
Yeah, right.
I mean, proportionally, they should be getting more.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I have no beef with the Big East getting seven teams or whatever. But anyway, I just think that the bubble's a little bit bigger than in years past just because the Pac-10 has done nothing to earn more than one bid. So you're going to have all those extra bids. And then the A-10 has really shrunk here at the end of the season. So you obviously never know who's going to steal bids in the small conferences.
And it's not a great year for the ACC either.
Right, which shrinks the bubble. But I just think that the SEC will end up with five. So I'm going with the three lock teams that we think, and then two of the three out of the Mississippi State, and Florida pool.
Who's the seventh team, the hypothetical seventh team from the Big 12? Like,
we'd have to name them all for me to tell you that, but
I don't know.
Missouri?
Now
Oklahoma State?
All right. Well, then, did you view, like, this is how I look at it. I look at, try to look at it pretty much free of conferences, which I may be on an island at that.
Uh-huh.
So, like, is that's Mississippi fine. State or Ole Miss better than Missouri or Oklahoma State? That's purely wrong.
I think we're going to see a lot of that this week in the conference tournament.
Right.
I think they're definitely on par with them. Like, just to think that the gap between those two conferences are that big is ridiculous to me, especially considering, and I've said this before, that the SEC's knocked off Kansas and Kansas State, mm-hmm. and that their head-to-head record was pretty competitive. The Big 12 held a two-game lead, but that's because they beat Arkansas three times, which is not one of the teams in the conversation anymore from the SEC. So I think it's been competitive. They have
an Arkansas team without their best player, too.
Right. It was that fourth. They have similar, like, out-of-conference wins and stuff like that. So I just don't see, like, you're giving them, like, points a lot for beating up on each other and then taking care of business against the lesser team. So I don't really know. I just don't feel like the gap is a three-team gap between the two conferences. I'd be very disappointed if it went down like that. Oklahoma State was a team that really didn't impress me all season long, but then they just got a huge win against Kansas that's probably going to catapult them definitely into the tournament. So,
and then I can kind of, now that I thought about it a little bit, see your case for five for the SEC, especially if Ole Miss is the one seed on the West, right?
No, Mississippi State.
Okay, so Ole Miss is the two, mm-hmm. but they're going to get the bye to Friday.
Uh-huh.
So they will play...
South Carolina.
Regardless of who Ole Miss plays, they're going to be favored to win that game. And then the next game would be against Vanderbilt, maybe?
Would the two play the two? The East two play the West two? Does that make sense?
You're saying Ole Miss, but are
what,
you trying
I,
to
what
get,
I'm saying yeah. is if there could be a scenario where Ole Miss gets to the championship game by beating one of the top three in the East. We're not sure who that is.
Right.
And that would be a win that would solidify a team that's been hot the last four games.
Okay, I see where you come from. I'd agree to that. Ole Miss could certainly play their way into that spot.
And meanwhile, Florida only, say Florida beats Mississippi State, then you got probably a five team.
And you know what, this is going to sound ridiculous, but you know, maybe the team in the Big 12 that should most firmly be on the bubble is Texas at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it sounds ridiculous to say because they were number one at one point this year and they won their first 15 or 16 games, but they've been really crappy in conference and mediocre. I don't have their record in front of me because we're doing this from the car, so we don't have our normal resources, but they might be the most suspect of all those teams at this point.
Especially because they lost their starting point guard for the season, which...
Right.
And the committee is weird about how they deal with injuries, but yeah. It is something they take into account,
right.
We're told. Anyway.
So, and they may get the benefit of the doubt, like, oh, you're Texas and you are number one, so we're kind of going to put you in unfairly, and then that would lock in their seven bids, you know? So, whatever. It's going to be interesting come Selection Sunday, and like I said, a lot of these conference tournaments are going to be important. It seems like the teams in, like, the Colonial are holding serve right now, which is a potential two bid if, like, an upset happens there. And then the A-10 tournament's going to be interesting. You got Xavier, Richmond, and...
Spiders.
Xavier, Richmond, and who's the 13 that I'm forgetting right now? No.
Dayton?
No.
Xavier, Richmond.
Not Dayton.
Temple.
Temple, thank you. Xavier, Richmond, and Temple are the three teams that are going to be definitely in from that conference as of right now.
They're
so
all probably on the top side of the bracket, too. They're going to be seven
and
or eight seeds.
And if one of... Better. So if one of them wins the conference tournament, that's probably only a three-bid league. But if a Dayton or a URI or something wins, or St. Louis, who's been hot lately, wins, then they're probably four. So, I don't know. You'll see interesting stuff like that. If Butler gets upset, you know, who knows what's going to happen with those kind of tournaments. That'll probably determine how many teams we see out of the SEC and the Big 12 and stuff like that.
Right. All right, we're going to wrap this show up with our weekly awards, our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. The Reggie going to something good. Four of us saw in the week of sports, and Kyle going to something bad or otherwise disfavorable. We'll start with... we got some cops on the side of the road here. Need to get out of the other lane. Let's start with Kyle with your Reggie, because we're going to end on a bad note.
It'd be sweet if we got pulled over mid-podcast.
I would ask them to be on the podcast. I would. Right. I've been pulled over by a South Carolina cop. I would ask that guy.
Go fast. Go 90.
No. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to drive real safe right now.
We got to get a cop on the podcast.
All right. Maybe on the next podcast. Right. I never know what I'm going to do in Nashville.
We're not
going
to come on the way to Nashville with a special cop appearance.
Okay. Yeah. Just me alone in the car.
We got a sex columnist, an engineering student, and a cop on the day's podcast.
Big show. Kyle, Reggie.
Okay. My Reggie Nelson is going to go to more than a game. which you might know out there is the LeBron James high school documentary. I don't know who made it because I never looked that up, but it was very good. It was kind of like, it was totally told from like their point of view and made them sound as sweet as humanly possible, but it was very enjoyable. The footage was cool. Just seeing like how LeBron really grew up with all those guys his entire life, like not just high school, like his whole life he was friends with like pretty much their entire starting lineup in their senior year. It was just really cool to watch and kind of refreshing from what we know of high school sports and high school basketball in particular, where you just kind of go to the basketball factory and you team up with other All-Americans and there's only a few good teams. So I enjoyed it, really from the real-life value as well as the entertainment value. So more than a game, good job.
Nice. All right, I'm going to give my Reggie, this is a sentimental one, to you guys, you three. Oh, you guys. Because I've been on a lot of these SEC road trips. This is my last regular season SEC road trip as a basketball beat writer. It's been a lot of me, a lot of this guy, alone, out here on the roads. I drove to Arkansas alone. When I got the possibility of a full car going to Lexington for a sweet trip to Rupp, it made the trip for me, so I appreciate you guys. So I'm going to give my Reggie to you guys.
How about all the spooning you did in the hotel?
There was a lot. I mean, I never slept with a sex columnist before, and now I can say I've slept with the sex columnist.
Nice.
With capital T.
That's a nice job by you, Adam.
All right, new kid.
Oh, my Reggie, I got to give it out to the people of Kentucky. They could have not have been more welcoming and nice to me and Travis. We were decked out in our full Gator gear. We got nothing but smiles. They're really more than happy to engage us in conversation. You know, I just really had a great time. They seem to enjoy basketball a lot. I wish the Gainesville home crowd could be like that. So really a good performance by them all around, with the exception of one portly gentleman who decided to try and silence my heckling, to which I lambasted him, and I think I gave him an eating disorder. So other than that, Kentucky, way to go.
And that's really saying something, because we call Travis and New Kid friends, but they're really intolerable. And they're even more intolerable when they're rooting for a team at a sporting event.
It's true.
So I would not treat them kindly, and I know them very well. So really, Kentucky people either were very sedated, or they've just won so much this year, they don't care. But really, them putting up with you, they deserve more than what we can give them on this podcast.
Well, and the thing about New is and me is that we really don't hold back when it comes to going to these games. Like, we're pretty miserable to the opposing team in Gainesville. And we brought a little bit of the hate with us to Kentucky, but tried to be good-natured about it so we would make it back. And we had a good time with it, and everybody around us seemed to, too. They were taking pictures of us at the end of the game. It was a very good experience.
Like the sideshow you guys are.
All right, Travis, hit us with it.
We talked a little bit more about Ray Shipman early in the podcast, but I want to give my Reggie to him for his improvement over the last probably five or six games. And this is a guy that Florida really needs on their team this year and next year.
Don't transfer.
I know Adam thinks that he might not be around next year, but Ray Shipman's a quality role player that Florida basketball needs, and it's something they've been lacking over the last couple of years, in a defensive stopper and somebody that can do a little bit of offense.
I don't think he'll not be around next year. I know he won't be around next year. Like, honestly, I feel bad for Ray Shipman, and I'm glad you gave him your Reggie, because, like, he's a guy who is better than his role right now. He should be playing more than 9 minutes a game, especially when he's hot like he was. He should be playing more than 7 minutes against Vanderbilt. He's kind of getting a raw deal from Billy, because Billy's so faithful to a guy.
There's
like Herbie
Walker. There's no way
Walker,
he's never that minute thief, yeah. Darren Werner.
He's the six or seven guy on this team.
I mean, Kyle got a quote from him, and we actually, me and New saw Ray as he was leaving the gym today while we were waiting for you guys, and I said, good job, Ray, and we need to get you a little bit more minutes. And he turned around and kind of nodded his head and looked a little bit frustrated by that. So hang in there, Ray Shipman.
Yeah, he's obviously frustrated that he can't be out there to contribute more. But, you know, I wrote in the infamous Dan Werner column that as bad as Dan Werner is, I felt at the time he was probably their best option to be getting the minutes he was getting. And one of the reasons was the lack of development of Shipman and Murphy. Yeah. But lately, they've been very good. I like to think they all read the column as a team, and they each took away different things from it.
Like, no, he read it to him, actually.
What is that doing? Okay. Well, the volume on this might be outrageous, because that went straight across the board as a big blob for a couple minutes. So, not really sure. Sorry for hurting your ears out there. But as I was saying, I like to think they all read the column together, and Werner just went into a hole. He was, like, so embarrassed that he just, like, couldn't play basketball anymore. But Ray Shipman, Eric Murphy, they took it as a challenge.
Yeah.
And they rose to the occasion.
They went from a 5-deep to 6-deep team to probably 8-deep in the last 2 weeks. Despite the 3-game losing streak, they are getting a lot better production on their bench. I mean, 20 points today when you know, a couple weeks ago they had
two or six consecutive
games of 0 points, maybe.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, nobody hated on Ray Shipman earlier in the year more than I did, because I said he looked dumb out there. He was a turnover machine. You know, all he wanted to do is steal the ball and go dunk it on a fast break. He's changed a lot. He's matured a little bit. He's slashing into the lane. He'll get nice passes out to open guys on the perimeter. I like what I've seen out of Ray Shipman. He's come a long way. Personally, I hope for his sake he doesn't transfer and he gets a fair shake in Florida. So we're going to move on to the Kyles here.
Let's do it. Kyles, bad news. All right, so I'll start it off. My Kyle Jackson is going to go to Murray State. I know nobody out there knows who Murray State is. I don't really either, to tell you the truth, except that they beat my Moorhead State Eagles in the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament Final, which means no Moorhead in the tournament this year, which means no Kenneth Farid, one of my very favorite players in the entire nation, the nation's leading rebounder, will not be in the tournament this year, which means I'm not going to be watching the tournament this year. So that's my Kyle Jackson.
The tournament is your crack there.
Yeah. All right, gather around, kids. It's story time for my Kyle. We were driving in to Lexington trying to find the media parking. We had ourselves a parking pass. We're trying to find a
P-pass.
We had a P-pass. We were looking to find our parking lot, which was a little bit confusing. So we pull over next to Rupp, and we ask a security officer-type person, sir.
It was a police officer.
It was a police officer.
Lexington PD.
Yeah.
And on his...
All right, sir, where's the media parking? And this guy... surly, looked very angry at the fact that
he snarled at us.
I would use the word snarled.
I'm a broken man because he stared daggers at me.
And then his words, which I don't think any of us will soon forget, he says, "Ain't no damn media parking."
To which, not 3 seconds later, a kindly old woman behind him said, "Y'all looking for media parking? Right down the road."
Not to mention the fact that we had a P pass that said staff/media parking. It exists. That gentleman was just not interested in getting us on our way. So I'm going to give it to that guy. It's my Kyle Jackson.
I would not call that man a gentleman.
He was not there to protect and serve.
Far from it.
Like, far from it.
I could say it sarcastically, can I? All right, new.
A lot of you are going to disagree with me out there because this is the man who brought us the 04s, who got us 2 consecutive national championships.
Responsible for the program we have.
And I would if my friends in the car will verify that I'm the biggest Darren Werner hater there is.
Oh, wait, you don't have any friends in the car. So no one's going to verify.
And I would normally take my one and only chance on the Alligator Sports Podcast to just give it to Darren Werner, but I can't do that because we all know how bad he is. I'm going to give it to Billy Donovan, and the reason I'm going to give it to Billy Donovan is his poor coaching down the stretch, putting said Dan Werner out there when he has other players who are hot. I'm going to give it to him for his poor recruiting choices. When you have multiple undersized guards who can't get to the rim, who when they dribble past someone, they have to lay up a floater that usually gets blocked, you know, you're not really going to have great scoring for a team that relies so hard on the three, and they can't really shoot the three that well. You know, a lot of it goes on Billy. He's been making some bad decisions as of late, and you know, I just got to give it to him. Hopefully, this serves as a wake up call for him.
This award,
this Kyle on his mantle next to a couple of the SEC coaches of the years that he has
that he doesn't have.
Oh, he's
never won SEC coach.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Well, that shows my knowledge of SEC basketball. But yeah, so Billy Donovan, you get the Kyle Jackson Bad Award, whatever it's called.
Bad Apple of the Week. I actually agree with this. I've sort of defended Billy a little bit at the beginning of the year. I said I thought he was doing a good job with this team, considering, you know, what he's had to work with. But they've developed, they've come as far as they can, and he's not using the talent he has. He's not making the right decisions. He's getting complacent with the guys that he has, and he deserves that.
He seems to be really stubborn right now.
Yeah.
In that, like, you know, Kentucky's raining threes in the first half. Vanderbilt's raining threes in the first half last Tuesday. Because Florida's playing his own defense and they're not athletic enough to get out on the perimeter and defend the shots, but yet won't even give the guys the benefit of the doubt of going to man and trying to force them to beat us inside.
And there's two guys he's really stubborn about. It's Irving Walker and Dan Werner. And those are the guys who, like, there are positions where it can kill you. Like, you don't take Irv out of the game, he's going to stay in their point, come down, jack up a shot, when it should be Kenny Boyd and create.
And even on the defensive end, probably the biggest liabilities on the floor when they're out there.
Yeah. And not only his decision-making, it seems like he can't get any big impact recruits because people don't want to play for him. It seems like people keep transferring away. Look at Nick Calathes. You know, this team would have been a really good team with Nick Calathes. And he...
Debatable.
he goes over to Greece because...
You're right, they could have been great.
They would have been much better than they are right now. But, you know, he's had a ton of transfers, a ton of notable transfers. Look at Jonathan Mitchell lighting it up with Rutgers now. So, I mean, a lot of that goes on him. And, you know,
that's the eye test.
Yeah, I think overall as a coach, I mean, obviously we've beaten some of those other points to death.
Yeah.
The transfer rate is, in fact, alarming. But he should at least get a Kyle Jackson for what he did today as far as the personnel decisions that he made were absolutely terrible, inexcusable even, in my opinion. So.
I mean, how many field goals have they had in the last 10 minutes of the last three games?
I don't know about 10 minutes of this game. 9:53 on Vanderbilt they had.
It's like 6:30 on this day.
Georgia was not in the last 4 minutes. I don't know how many times they scored against Georgia.
Not a great deal. Less than 10, I'd say.
They seem to peak between the under 16 and the under 8 in the second half.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And as we said, me and Adam were sitting very close to the bench. At one point, Billy came over and tapped me to go check in, and left Ray Shipman just standing there. So I don't know about the decisions he's making as far as subbing guys in and out.
All right, Travis. Next, Travis.
All right, a little bit of a backstory. If you know anything about me, you know that I am a blatant homer for the Boston Red Sox and equally the opposite of my hatred for the New York Yankees. So I gave my Kyle to the New York Yankees because I fired up the laptop when I was in the library Tuesday afternoon, I think it was, and the Yankees' first spring training game was on, and they proceeded to have some guys sing the national anthem for what seemed like 3.5 minutes. Then do a flyover for a spring training game, which I've never even seen before. How do you get the Air Force, whoever, to coordinate that? Like, this is taxpayer money at work for a spring training game. It's ridiculous. And then beyond that, Derek Jeter comes out on the field with Yogi Berra, Bucky Dent, assorted Yankees so-called legends who are all in full uniform at 85 years of age with things jiggling where they shouldn't be. And then out comes Derek Jeter out of the dugout with the World Series trophy. When a game should be going on, they're taking pictures on the field. And then to top it all off, I see Joe Girardi, who had his number at 27 last year because he wanted the Yankees to win their 27th World Championship. And now he's turned around and changed it to 28 because they actually won that World Series and made my life miserable. So, big Kyle across the board to the Yankees. And thanks for cranking up the hate already in this baseball season.
Go ahead,
Nick. Well, I mean, I have to defend my Yankees. You know, I hail from New York. Been a Yankee fan my whole life. You got to respect the guy who's just constantly motivated. He puts that 28 on his back. You know, it's an ongoing quest. You never get complacent. You got to win a world championship every year. Next year, he's going to cheat at the 29. Year after that, 30. You can go all as long as he's the coach and he keeps increasing the number on his back, I'm happy with him.
Couple comments on that. First, I thought him changing his jersey number was just the running count of the Tiger Woods mistresses.
Oh, but, I'll make sure everybody will be here all week.
Boom, and I got another one.
Or at least for the next 8 hours.
Yeah. And as far as the things jiggling in places they shouldn't, I think your current DH has a couple things jiggling in places they shouldn't.
Imagine how dare we talk about the most clutch hitter in the history of baseball.
we're talking about Big Fatty, by the way, DH for the Red Sox.
He's officially changed his name. He wants only to be referred to as Big Fatty this season. So, but other than that, good Kyle Jackson. Yeah. I, too, hate the Yankees with a passion. So screw the Yankees.
Yeah. Good Kyle Jackson, an inspired rant. I'm always a fan of this.
Nice.
So, Kyle, you want to end this up with your Kyle?
I gave my Kyle out.
Yeah.
So Murray
first.
State Bears?
See, that was so forgettable.
Question mark?
That was so forgettable to me. I already forgot.
I
want to
bring up that Kyle.
Yeah.
That's a bad job, buddy.
All right, well, I guess that wraps it up for this show. Certainly does not wrap it up for this drive. I think we're about 8 hours from Gainesville. We're going to get in about 4 a.m. It's going to be ridiculous. But send any feedback you have to podcast at alligator.org. Yeah, there's certainly Bojangles in our future.
Take that,
possibly. New Kid, you want to give the kids a plug where they can read your fine work?
Yeah, I just signed on as the Alligator Sex columnist this semester. Signed up.
His signing bonus is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. I get paid a lot. So, anyway, I really would appreciate if you guys check out my column. It comes out Thursday in the Avenue section of the Alligator. You can go online at alligator.org and navigate to the Avenue section and read my past columns. Got some good ones coming up after spring break about pornography and long-distance relationships and booty calls. So make sure to check that out, and you can send any feedback to... I can't give you an email, but you guys can probably find your internet savvy. So, yeah, check out my column. I really appreciate that. And go Gators and go Sex.
All right, go Sacks.
we try to end every show by saying that's good. Somebody got it in.
Travis is pleading with me to give him a Twitter plug.
Well,
I mean,
if you want to follow somebody that's actually a fan of the Gators on Twitter and not Kyle, who just seems to hate on the Gators.
What is it, Little Gator Fan?
Oh, that's not even fair.
As long as he's not on the show.
For those of you who don't know how what Travis looks like, he's so short he fits in your pocket.
All right, so at
Gator 87 on Twitter.
At Little Gators Fan.
Yeah, it's Little Gator Guy.
T Gator 87, that's what it actually is.
All right, you can send any feedback to us at podcast@alligator.org. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/alligatorsports. I'll probably be tweeting up in Nashville. I could use some company and some conversation, so find me on Twitter. We'll talk about Florida SEC basketball. I'll go on the Alligator Sports one. I don't like to give my own personal one a whole lot. I don't use it a whole lot, so I only tweet from the games from the Alligator Sports.
All right, well, I'm planning on writing a column on part of this experience, which I will link on Twitter or our website.
Good.
So you can follow me, or you can go through the Alligator Sports one. I'm probably being followed by that. Right. And then, obviously, you know where to go, alligatorsports.org.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to apologize for any sound quality difficulties. I've been watching this massive blob, which makes me think we're blowing out your eardrums. And then possibly at other times you couldn't hear us at all. So really sorry for any of that. Adjust your volume accordingly. Don't hold it against us. We don't have our microphones. So.
It's a good job by you, though, Kyle, doing the producing this show. Though.
I mean,
first time as producer?
I click record and not record.
Yeah, that's all I do. They call me producer for the whole time.
The mobile studio, too, that is the Toyota Echo.
Yeah, don't worry. After this is all done, I'm going to remix it. So.
We're going to auto-tune it, and it's going to be great.
Well, thanks for having us on. It's been an honor, guys.
Yeah, it's fun.
I appreciate you guys doing it and entertaining us on the drive home. So thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry.